Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Terrible Tommy. Tom Metzger in the Heartland, in the bunker next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern, where the elite meet to drink and sometimes eat, where Ethel hangs out. Yeah. It is February the 3rd, 2009, here in cold and freezy and icy north central Indiana. Tuesday, all day today. Boy, I'm telling you, it snowed again last night. I think I'm in Lower Slobovia. You remember Little Abner? They had a place called Lower Slobovia. Anyhow, here we go. We're getting ready to go, and we're expecting Gorilla Radio Man in here today. Any second. I'm not sure whether he's coming in on his triplane, biplane, or on skis. Hopefully he'll be here any second. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. The rant line is 574-267-5036. Stand by.
Ghost Wolf Radio calling. Ghost Wolf Radio calling. This is Ghost Wolf Radio calling, and I'm your host, the dog-faced pariah, whose mind is on fire. I'm an enemy of empire. I have no sons to sire. Chaos, my desire. Of tolerance, I'm sick and tired. White politicians are liars. Throw them all on my funeral pyre, for our future looks dire. I'm a racist live wire. In black, brown, and yellow, we are mired. You know, a lot of you know I come from Chicago. And, getting a little feedback there. And, we have our mayor going over to Dubai and other Middle Eastern cities on a business exchange. I think that's horseshit. I'm sick and tired of Mayor Daley trying to be Mr. International. And he's going over with a delegation of... Who knows what's going on with that. Alright. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you realize that you are part of a race that was formed on the hammer and anvil of Ice Age Europe. You need to realize that. You know, I was watching... Believe it or not, this is going to come as a shock to you, but I was watching BET last night. You know, I'll check in on BET every now and then, see what kind of shit they're peddling for truth. And Malcolm X was on, you know, a Spike Lee movie that came out, I don't know, sometime in the mid-90s, I believe. And, you know, some of the things that Malcolm X was saying, because I guess, you know, the movie is based on actual things he said and dialogues that he has done or whatever, but sort of the same shit that I've been saying. And there was one portion where they said they want complete separation. And I ask you guys out there, and I ask any blacks who may happen to hear this show, what happened? Where did it all go? I mean, you know, the Black Panthers or people who are of a black separatist mindset, they're not nowhere near as numerous as they were in the 60s. I mean, they're nowhere near as being the pariahs that white separatists are in our society. But, you know, where did it all go? I mean, you know, it kind of hit me that the system was, I mean, it's, you know, you guys got to realize out there, they're not only going after us, but they're going after any separatist group. And you could pretty much honestly say that the black separatist movement is gone. It's pretty much a dead letter. And that's, you know, one thing that I would love to ask all these black talking heads who are constantly on TV bitching and complaining about this and that. You know, why don't you push for your 40 acres and a mule? You know? Why don't you raise some hell about having your own homeland here in North America? I would support that. I believe it's unrealistic for us to think that we could take all these blacks and ship them back to Africa. That would be a logistics nightmare. But for starters, you know, we can give them their own land, and as time goes by, maybe 50 to 100 years, that land of theirs would definitely descend into chaos and anarchy. You know, all you got to do is look at Africa to see what a future Republic of New Africa on American soil would look like, or North American soil. But you know, I was thinking the other day, if I was a businessman and I invested millions and millions of dollars into my factory, into my assembly line system, got everything going, my machines are up and running, and I made a certain product that was part of the industrial apparatus somehow, that, you know, I made a product that served industry somehow. And I rolled out millions and millions of this part that my factory specializes in. And out of the millions that I manufactured, only 50 of them were useful in any way. Well, that's like the black race. Out of the millions of black people, you know, that are not only here in America, but, you know, but Canada and England and other parts of Europe, we're not getting our money's worth. So if the system who controls our government, who controls international finance, I mean, if they were really smart businessmen, they would have to say, listen, we are losing too much money on black people. We need to come up with some way to cut their populations down. We need to come up with some way to humanely, you know, so they could sleep at night, I guess. Come up with some way to humanely, you know, maybe sterilize them. Because out of the millions of black people in America, how many have really contributed to society? Well, you know, there's a couple black scientists out there. You know, Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's the part of the Hayden Planetarium or whatever. You know, he's a pretty smart guy. You know, you got Clifford Johnson, he's the astrophysicist at University of California in Berkeley, or some school out there on the West Coast. But, you know, I mean, millions and millions of black people who are nothing but human scum on our city streets, and that race has only managed to put out just a few shining examples. We're not getting our money's worth. So if I was running some kind of factory, and I made millions of this part, and only 50 of them were bought, I'd have to stop manufacturing them. I mean, that would be smart business. So, I just thought I'd throw that into you guys. Okay. The Templar Vulcan came to me in my sleep the other night and told me to clarify what I said before about mortgage fires. I guess I got an email from someone. And like I said, I'm not telling anyone to go out there and do nothing like you guys have already been told before. I'm working on a book, and you know, kind of like a Turner Diaries book, and my main character, Eric Blackburn, you know, he's trying to get some things going, trying to be a agent of chaos in society. I'm not saying that people who are about to lose their home should set their own home on fire. You know, according to an email I got, they said that, you know, that's like cutting off the nose despite the face. And, you know, that person who wrote that email, they made a good point. So, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying me, as a guy who watches the news every morning, would just love to turn on CNN and hear about, you know, things going up in smoke at night, just lighting up the night sky. I think that would be good revenge against these financial institutions, you know. Any of you guys ever heard of a guy named A.H. Tanzer? I believe I got that name right. Well, he was the superintendent of schools in Chatham, Ontario in the 1930s. And he was a bleeding heart liberal. And he couldn't wait to test the IQ of blacks who, for the last 100 years, have lived among white people in Chatham, Ontario, who have gone to the same schools, who have pretty much had an equal status as the whites in the community of Chatham, Ontario. And he had their IQ tested. And it turned out that even though they've lived 100 years in and amongst whites, gone to the same schools, done the same things in the community, that they were still 15 points to 20 points lower than the white students. The same results that they got in Louisiana and Alabama and other parts of North America. So we're not getting our money's worth. We are not getting our money's worth. You know, I told you guys before, I watched a show on Thursday night on A&E called The Beast. And, you know, it stars Patrick Swayze. And, you know, he has some one-liners every now and then in this show. And one of the one-liners he said in last week's episode, he says, "It is amazing what people can get used to." And, man, that is so correct. It's amazing what white people will get used to. Not put up with, but get used to. You know, watching their communities become racially diverse, and then all of a sudden they wake up one day, third of minority in that area. And they're much older, and much less likely able to defend themselves. It's happening all over the Western world. Things that are happening in America are happening in Europe, happening in Australia. It's amazing what white people will get used to. As you guys know, I'm a huge, diehard, extreme metal fan. Black metal, death metal, thrash metal. I love that stuff. You know, but the music industry is really doing whatever they can to soft soap metal. I'm telling you right now, there's more black guys in metal than there are white rappers. They don't gotta worry about promoting white rappers too much, because the way hip-hop and black culture is really promoted in the white community, they don't really need white rappers to make rap or hip-hop, you know, palpable for white people. They don't need to do that. But there is a segment of white society that's just too white for them, and that's the metal crowd. You know, they're also going after the country western crowd, too. I think there's a black artist in country now. And in fact, Snoop Dogg, that piece of gangster shit from L.A., actually did a country album, I think, with Tim McGraw or something like that. So they're really going after white society. And they're really pushing, they're really signing metal bands that got black members. And there's this, I guess you can classify them as metal. I think their music is too soft to really be considered metal, but I consider them hard rock. But there's a band from Chicago called Disturbed. From the Chicago area. I don't know exactly where. The lead singer, David Draiman, is a filthy, bagel and lox eating piece of shit Jewish kike motherfucker. And I've heard many interviews with him, and he's really intoxicated by the sound of his own voice when he's talking. I mean, this guy really thinks... I mean, you can hear it in people's voice when they talk, and this guy's really got a high opinion of himself. And I used to like Disturbed until I found out that the guy, that the lead singer, was Jewish. That's when I just cut him off right then and there. Well, that's kind of close-minded of you, Frank. What'd you do that for? Because I don't trust Jews, that's why. Jews have to earn my trust, not with what they say, but with what they do. What are you saying, Frank? You would allow Jewish revolutionaries in the white separatist movement? Damn right I would, especially if they was really doing something that had a huge impact on society. I mean, I would look the other way on their Jewishness if they were really doing some radical, fanatical shit. But this band Disturbed, I never forgave the lead singer for what he did in Germany one time. Disturbed was playing somewhere in Germany, and he came out with wearing a Holocaust Nazi concentration camp survivor's uniform. You know, the striped pajamas. You know, had the skull cap and everything. And he had a number written on the inside of his arm, like, with the, you know, the numbers they used to tattoo the Jews with or whatever. You know, just throwing it back in the German's face. But Disturb is going on tour, I guess, this upcoming summer, or is on tour now, with a band called Kill Switch Engage. And they used to have a white singer, but now they got a black singer. They've had a black singer for a number of CDs now. So I ask you guys, I beg of you, do you have any Disturb CDs? Destroy them. Don't ever buy their music again. Don't go see them in concert, even if they're with a band you like. You know, I watch a lot of YouTube videos with concert footage, you know, of, you know, extreme metal bands. Some of my favorite videos on YouTube are a band called 6 Feet Under, a death metal band from the United States. And they're playing over at the Wacken Music Festival in Germany. And you know, a Muslim wants to go to Mecca at least once in his life, right? And a Christian wants to make a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. I would love it. I mean, I would be, I could die a happy man if I was just to get a chance to go to the Wacken Music Festival in Germany, in Wacken, Germany. And it's 4 days long, 4 days of nothing but extreme metal. They got like three or four stages with different bands playing. There's thousands of people. I mean, this thing makes Monsters of Rock or Ozfest look like a walk in the park. I mean, this thing is huge. And some of the most extreme metal bands in the world come from all over the world come and play there. Norwegian black metal bands, Swedish death metal, American death metal bands. And when you watch, when I watch these music videos of 6 Feet Under playing over in Germany, and the huge crowds, I think to myself, what potential? I mean, this stuff, this music really moves the crowd. If there's any way that we can somehow reach those people, and believe me, the system is doing all they can to keep us from reaching those people. And the way they do it, they do it by signing metal bands with black members. You know, bands like Suffocation, who's got a black drummer and a black guitarist. So, something to think about. Metal could be a real good way to reach the disaffected, the throwaway kids. Gotta get them off of drugs. But if they don't do drugs, more the better. Okay, let's talk about some things here. Starting today, you guys, you ghost wolves that are truly active, if you're, you know, like I said before, if you're just listening to the show, you're not a true ghost wolf. But starting today, start sowing seeds of misinformation on a destiny that you would go to if you were on the run. But you would never go there. I've told many co-workers before, you know, because I had a general working knowledge of Spanish. You know, I'm not saying I'm fluent in it, but I can be understood in Spanish. And I can get my point across. I can carry on somewhat of a conversation. So I've told people before, say, yeah, man, if I was ever on the run, I'd go to Guadalajara, Mexico, man. There's a lot of white people in Guadalajara, a lot of white Mexicans. You know, I could just disappear there, man. I could reinvent myself. I would never do that. I've told people, man, I would go to Florida, man. You know, I can go to Fort Lauderdale area, Fort Lauderdale, you know, because they got a lot of women there, and I could just live on the beach. And I mean, I planted these seeds in people's heads, and I just don't come out of the blue and just say it. I mean, I slip it in casually in conversations that I have, and I don't do it over and over again, but I do it every now and then. So anyone who knows me, they have it, and if they were ever to be questioned by agents of Zog because I turned up missing, oh yeah, Frank, he's talking about it. Yeah, he really would love to go to Fort Lauderdale someday and, you know, maybe just relocate down there. He would love to go to Guadalajara, Mexico for at least a few years just to lay low. You know, I guess he knows people down there because of coworkers that he used to work with. You know, I mean, just all kinds of stuff. So start today sowing seeds of misinformation on a destiny you would go to if you ever became a wanted man. Okay? I want to clarify something here. A couple of shows ago, I talked about crossing danger areas. And just a real quick review. You know, we've reached a point in this country where things have really gone gorilla. Hope that happens. And you know, you're part of a patrol, seven-man patrol, and you're coming through a wooded area, forest preserve, you know, just a wooded area, and you come upon a road. Roads, alleys, trails, they're all danger areas. You can get lit up, shot up, if you cross them, okay? So you need to use caution. One of the things you can do when you come upon a road, you stop, you give a security halt. In a security halt, when you either get down or take a knee or get in a prone position, not everyone's weapon is facing forward. You're facing out. The point man, his weapon system is orientated to the front. Everyone else is orientated to their flanks and covering your sector of fire, okay? The number six and seven man would come forward, you know, real quick word with the patrol leader, and he would say, all right, you guys check that out, you know, see what's going on there. Number six man would provide near side security. That's the side that your patrol, the side of the road that your patrol is on. The seven man would cross the road. He would recon an area large enough to encompass your patrol, come back to the far side of the trail or the road and give the signal that the rest of the patrol can cross. And while all that was going on, your number five man was providing rear security. That means he's covering your 6 o'clock. Okay, so the patrol crosses the road. The number one, two, three, four, and five man. As the five man crosses the road, the number six man, who provides near side security, will pick it up right in his same place that he was in the patrol, and when the patrol crosses the road, number seven man picks up and just falls right back in line as the number seven man, okay? But I didn't clarify what you would do with a big open area. You don't do that with a big open area or an open field. You just skirt the wood line as best you can. You know, if you don't got a real thick wood line that you can just go circumvent the open area, then do the best you can using cover and concealment. Groves of trees, bushes, you know, exploit all cover and concealment. And that means low ground. That means, you know, dried up creek beds. That means, you know, just general depressions in the ground, you know. That is cover and concealment. Whatever keeps you from being seen or being shot is cover and concealment. Okay. The person who wanted me to clarify, well, not clarify, but, you know, disagreed with me on my, the things I got going on in my upcoming novel, you know, about the mortgage fires, also said that, made a good point that you should never write anything down to get people's attention in a ghost tool of operation. The action would speak for itself. And that person, that is very, very correct. You're absolutely right about that. So, I want to reiterate that. Never write anything down. The act will speak for itself. Okay? And if you were somehow, because you've done a number of things and you've gotten the attention of Zog, if you felt like you had to call a newspaper or whatever, get one of them voice changers first. Don't use your natural voice, because that could be recorded. I mean, it could be recorded without you even knowing it, okay? I filled out a survey the other day. Some lady called me up on the phone. She says she's from the Scarborough Research Center or this or that. And, you know, she asked me general questions about what newspapers I read and this and that. She said she's going to send me a survey if I would just take time to fill it out, you know, and I said, sure, whatever. So I got in the mail on Saturday after I got home from the UFC, or watching the UFC at my friend's house. Very happy about the outcome of the UFC. George St. Pierre, outstanding specimen of Aryan manhood. I mean, just pummeled BJ Penn, the Asian slope from Hawaii. Very happy with that. But there was a black fighter who beat Stephen Bonner. Stephen Bonner was, He trains here in Chicago, the Gracie Academy, but he's from Indiana somewhere, so I was, you know, sad to see him lose. Lost by decision. And Clay Guida, if you guys follow the UFC, Clay Guida's from this area. I've met him at a couple local shows. Nice guy. And he won his fight against the wannabe nigger Nate Diaz from Stockton, California. So I was really happy. So I got home, and I found the survey in my mailbox, and I filled it out. Finished it on Sunday. And you know, when I'm filling this thing out, I mean, this is really personal information. I mean, not personal about... You know, there was a place for me to put my views down there, and I really just... I said what I felt about how I don't like the mind-numbing shows on television, how I'm sick and tired of women with breast implants trying to sell me something. And I'm sick and tired of TV trying to be used to socially engineer us. You know, I put that down in my opinion box. But, you know, it asked what I watched. It asked my schedule, what I watched at 5 o'clock on Monday, Tuesday. It covered a 7-day period. It asked what kind of car I drive. And right at from the get-go, when I started filling this out, I'm like, I am not going to be honest with this. Because a really trained profiler can take this survey. I don't know who Scarborough fucking Research Center is. They could be a front for the FBI. So I filled out the survey, and I embellished on a lot of things. I mean, I lied about a lot of things on there. And I was not truthful about what I watched on TV. I mean, I shaded in a few things because I've mentioned these shows on Ghost Wolf Radio before. So I made sure I mentioned those shows. But I didn't mention everything that I watch, you know. So, but, you know, it did send me $5 in cash, and me being basically a homeless person with a home, this house I live in, it's not my house. I'm basically babysitting an empty house with a few articles of furniture, but be it as it may. So, if you guys ever get a survey that you're going to fill out, you activists, if you get a survey in the mail, don't be truthful with it. Do not be truthful with it. I mean, you know, if you've been contacted by law enforcement before because of your racial beliefs, then, you know, write in the opinion box what you really think about what television is. Television is an instrument of propaganda. It is an instrument of inculcating into the minds of white people what these social engineers want us to think. That's what television is. I can't specifically say that that's what it is in Europe. I'm sure there's an element of that in European TV, but it's definitely typifies American television. Okay? So never be nowhere near the realm of honesty when you fill those out. You know, think about a human being's brain as a filing cabinet. You pull out the drawer and you're looking for a file. That's the brain. Think of that analogy when you think of the human brain. And you're going through the files. You see childhood development. Come across a file that says opinions, political beliefs, religious beliefs. You know? Then you come to the file that says perceptions of me, meaning the me is the person you are looking through this file. You're not the owner of the filing cabinet. You're not the owner of the person's brain. But I just want to reiterate that if you were to look at that file, that file on perceptions of me, perceptions of you, that it would be blank, completely blank, because you, the Ghost Wolf, controls what is painted on the canvas of people's perception of you. I was doing a little scouting the other day, Sunday actually, and the way I do it, I always assume I'm being watched, and I never act like I'm nervous. I never look over my shoulder too much furtively. I just carry myself, you know, I look down on the ground a lot, walk with my hands in my pocket, you know, just moseying along like I ain't got a care in the world, or I'm in deep thought about something personal. And every now and then, you know, I'll stop, you know, when I come to a lamppost or whatever, and I'll just you know, flex one of my legs, you know, like acting like I, you know, like my knees bother me or something. When people look at that, they don't look at that kind of body language with suspicion, okay? So whenever you're going about your scouting, you know, I've said it before, casual confidence, but you want to act in a way that you always assume that you're being watched. A lot of nosy people in our society. Snitch culture, remember? So you control what is painted on the canvas of perception in people's minds of you. You control that totally. Okay? I'm trying to finish up this chapter in Freedom in the Realm of Madness. And my hero of the book, Eric Blackburn, just got done scouting. He's actually recounting by night a landmark that was preserved by some, the city of Lincoln Heights, the city I made up. I don't know if there's a city of Lincoln Heights in Illinois. You know, but he's the Lincoln Heights, Illinois Historical Society, renovated this old house that was built in 1908. And, you know, they just got done putting all this money into it, and it's done, and Eric is checking things out, and he's waiting for the small hours of the morning. He comes up to the building, and he uses a surreptitious entry method, you know. Takes a glass cutter out, and he cuts a triangle over the locking mechanism of a lower floor window, puts a piece of duct tape over the triangle, pushes in on it with a rag or a towel, a dark colored towel, exploiting every shadow. And the window that he picked out was within a shadow. No sensor lights to come on when he walked up to the building, because he reconned that a couple nights before to see if there were any sensors. He walked completely around the building to see if he could trip any sensors. And when he did that, he didn't have any Ghost Wolf Ops tools with him. Because if he ever got stopped or anything, he's just a guy trying to cut through the yard, or he's just a guy trying to look for a private place to take a piss. Okay? He's just out and about. You have nothing incriminating on you when you do your recon. Okay? But in this book that I'm writing, he gets into the building. He opens up a window on the south end of the house and sets fire to the north end of the house. The fire will move towards that south window because that's where the source of oxygen is, causing more damage. He did that, and he gets out of the building, and since he knows most arsonists watch their work go up in flames, he doesn't do that. He gets completely out of the area, and maybe he'll come back in a couple of days, drive by during daylight hours when there's a lot of human activity on the roads, and check his work. But he left a sign. Yeah, I know, don't write anything down. But he carved it into a tree, or he carved it into the side of the house, or he wrote it on a piece of paper in human blood. Blood of someone he killed 2 days before. And he wrote the sign in human blood. And the sign said, "If the white race won't defend its future, then they deserve no past." You know what? I've talked to a lot of people on these historical societies. And I talked to some people in the one in Wheaton, Illinois, because as it stands, the person who this park is named after in Wheaton, Illinois, I'm actually related to them. I'm like, wow, kind of cool. But they're usually old ladies. Usually people that aren't even thinking about the survival of the white race. Or maybe they are, but maybe they want to be politically correct. So they say, well, we got to preserve this. They use code words like, we got to preserve our history. But they won't come right out and say, we got to preserve our race. I want them to come right out and say, we got to preserve our race. I want that phrase to be in the news, you know, Aryan terrorists who claim they're defending the survival of their race. I want that to be on the news and in the papers. I want young people to read that and say, wow, what's going on with the white race, you know? So, if the white race won't defend its future, then they deserve no pass. I don't give a damn about any of these historical landmarks. And, you know, historical landmarks in the United States is nothing compared to historical landmarks in Europe, which are hundreds of years old. And you all need to be concerned about Europe. It's our ancestral homeland. It's our motherland. Okay? You're not an American. You're a European American. You're a transplanted European. I don't care if your bloodline is... My bloodline, I'm related to John Quincy Adams, the sixth president of the United States. My bloodline through my mother came in this country like in 1611, or not 1680, you know, 1700, somewhere within that time. Didn't come on the Mayflower, but, you know, I see myself as a white Occidental transplanted European. Okay. So remember, the canvas of perception and people's brains, you control that. All right, let's talk about some things here. If you're ever in a shootout defending your home, defending your family, always consolidate and reorganize your ammunition, okay? You're with a group of guys, and you guys just got attacked by some shit-skin gangbangers, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a lull in the shooting. They could have ran away completely, or they could be going away to... you know, reorganize for a counter or attack or to attack again. You're not going to just think because the shooting stopped, they ran away, that they're gone, that they've gone away for good. Don't ever assume that. Stay in your fighting position. Make sure that you consolidate, reorganize your ammo. This is something we did all the time after a mission. You know, like if we did an ambush, we would, you know, the assault element that went through the ambush, the kill zone, they would pick up security positions on the far side of the kill zone in the ambush, you know, because you chase the enemy off or you think you've killed everyone in the kill zone. If you have one, a guy who only has two rounds of ammunition left and you have another guy who has 30, you need to consolidate that. The guy who has 30 needs to give up 15 rounds. You want everyone to have an equal amount of ammunition as they can. Okay, so that's consolidate, reorganize. If you're ever in a situation like that, check the ammo status. If there's a lull in the shooting, check the ammo status of everyone. We used to call it an ACE report. ACE was an acronym, of course. The Army likes to use a lot of acronyms. ACE was ammo, or AA was ammo, C was casualties, and E was equipment. Are you missing any equipment? Is any equipment damaged? So, if you're ever in a situation like this where you're defending a home or defending a campground in the woods, you're attacked by shitskins for whatever reason, there's a lull in the shooting, you think they've ran away, or you think they've gone to another place to organize a counterattack or something, make sure you disseminate ammunition so everyone has roughly the same amount. And the person that did it only have two rounds of ammo, and the other guy had 30, maybe you need to talk to that guy and say, hey, conserve your ammo, take well-aimed shots, don't just be shooting into the goddamn, you know, sky or into the trees, you know. Make sure you're shooting at something that you think you can hit. I know there is a thing called suppressive fire where you want to keep their heads down or whatever, but it's good practice to consolidate, reorganize, and get that into your training program. Okay, if you're on the move in your house or in your apartment complex because your family's being held hostage or you're defending yourself, okay? And you're on the move, and you're in a shootout with some gangbangers, and law enforcement is miles and miles away, and they're not there to help you. And you got to defend yourself. You got to defend your family, you know? You're trying to rescue your family. You know, you're running and gunning. You're shooting. You're moving from one cover place to another. Cover, by the way, is something that will stop a bullet. A tree or a bush will not stop a bullet. A tree trunk will stop a bullet, but a bush will not stop a bullet, okay? So, But, you know, you're running and gunning, and you have a lull in your thing. Maybe the enemy that you were shooting at moved to another position to try to ambush you, whatever. And I said on a number of shows before, try to count your ammo. Try to switch magazines at a point where when you're pulling out the magazine in your magazine well in your Sig Sauer or whatever, that they're still around in the chamber. So if somebody just rushed you immediately, you at least have one round, and you insert in a fresh round. When there's ever a lull in the shooting, and you really don't know how many rounds you shot, I'm not talking about just shooting three rounds. You don't want to be changing magazines all the time. But if you have a magazine of 15, you think maybe you fired 8 to 9 to 10 rounds, put in a fresh mag. Put in a fresh magazine of ammo during a lull in the shooting, okay? Think about that. I was reading an anthropology textbook the other day, and, you know, this anthropologist did a story about these Eskimos. You know, I don't have anything negative against Eskimos. I don't talk shit about Eskimos like I do about blacks. Eskimos aren't raping, robbing, and pillaging white people. You know, niggers are doing that. So, I talk a lot of shit about niggers and spics because they're just subhumans who tear apart civilization. Eskimos don't tear apart civilization. They stick in their own geographic area, whether it's, you know, northern Canada or Alaska or whatever, you know. But this anthropologist was embedded with this tribe for, I don't know, a certain amount of time, and he noticed that these old guys, these old Eskimos, man, they could really predict animal behavior. And he noticed one time that they were on a whale hunt. You know, everything was quiet. All of a sudden, the old guy, you know, gets up. Hey, there's a whale coming. There's a whale coming. I guess they were on a floating chunk of ice or something. I don't remember what. But sure enough, like a minute later, a whale broke the surface of the water with his blowhole and stuff like that. And the guy, the anthropologist, who's from some school in the United States, like, how did you know that? Experience, you know, teaches him that. And I'm telling you, if the shit ever hit the fan in this world, well, there's no more electricity, there's no more technology, where everything's back to the Stone Age, we white Westerners have a long way to fall. Whereas these Eskimos or these Bedouins in the Middle East who ride camels from one water hole to another, they would be probably unaffected by the collapse of civilization and technology, which is within the realm of possibility. Don't ever think that won't happen. But we white people, we have lost touch with the natural world. Well, I mean, our civilized mindset now, in the scheme of time, is not even a millisecond, because it wasn't too long ago where our ancestors were well in tune with the natural world. They hunted, they trapped. You know, they made shelters out of things from nature. The clothes on their back were the skins of wolves and bears. We have lost touch with the natural world. And we need to do whatever we can to there's nothing wrong with being part of a civilized society that is taking advantage of technology, because we are, white people are the creators of technology. But we need to stay in touch with the natural world. Don't ever lose touch with that, because we could go back there someday, you know, not of our own choice, but we could go back there. Stay in touch with the natural world. Today is Tuesday. I know Tom Metzger's like, today is Monday, Moon's Day. You know, he'll say Wednesday is Woden's Day, and Thursday is Thor's Day, and Friday, Freya's Day, and Saturday is the day they, our ancients worship Saturn, and Sun's Day is worshiping the sun. I don't think he knows this, or maybe he forgot, but Tuesday is named after Tyr, the Norse god of revenge, and I believe he's the Norse god of something else. But Tuesday used to be called Tyr's Day, T-Y-R, Tyr's Day. And over time it was bastardized into Tuesday. Okay. Thinking about something the other day. If you're on a night op, you should have a watch with you. I mean, if you can do without a watch, good. But you should have, maybe, I mean, you could do without it, but it'd be nice to have a watch, because maybe you may need to know the exact time of someone's leaving an institute or installation, or somebody's arriving. You may need to check your watch, because they could be running a few minutes late, and if you don't have a watch, you may think that they're not going to show up that night, whatever. I was watching an episode of Forensic Files the other day, and this guy, you know, he killed this girl, and a microscopic drop of her blood was on his the wristband of his watch. So they found that, and that, you know, he was busted because of that. If you wear a watch on a ghost wolf op, and I'm not saying you could be shedding any blood, maybe it's for something else, but you know, they sell these wristbands at sports stores. You know, tennis players like to have wristbands, you know, because keep the sweat from going into their hands, you know, the sweat that's on their forearms. Get one of these dark-colored wristbands that tennis players wear and have that over your watch, completely over your watch. If you need to look at time, you just peel back the wristband and look at the time. Plus, if you have one of those illuminated watch heads, watch faces that light up at night to let you see what time it is, you don't want to be walking around in the forest with a light on your watch. So get a black wristband and put it completely over the watch, all right? This way, if it does get any blood on it, it does get any soil that's indigenous to another part of the world or whatever, you can easily just burn it and then just buy a new one. So think about putting a wristband over a watch, you know, the kind that the tennis players wear. Okay. Yeah, I already talked about this one. Scouting, act natural. Sometimes act like you're, you know, got a need that's bothered you or something. That kind of stuff does not not draw attention. Okay? I thought of a way to check behind you, see if someone's following you. And, you know, I was thinking about this on Sunday when I was doing a little scouting of my own. Okay, you can, you're walking along, right? And all of a sudden you stop and you start patting your pants pockets frantically and looking in your jacket pocket like you're like, oh shit, I just lost something. I lost my wallet. I lost $5 I had in my pocket. And you look around and you look at the ground behind you, maybe retrace a few of your steps. You know what I'm talking about. You've done it before. Do that. But you know how you check the ground and back you to see if you dropped something? How you scan the sidewalk that you've walked on for the last maybe 100 feet, you can do that easily by checking to see if someone's following you, and it flows perfectly within the flow of human activity, normal human activity. You're not looking over your shoulder furtively to see if someone's watching you or following you. You act like you dropped something or lost something. You know, stop and then pat your pockets frantically and look through your coat pocket and like, oh, fuck, man, what did I do with that, you know? Like maybe you lost a checkbook or something, okay? And then look behind you and then maybe retrace a few of your steps looking at the ground and then look up further up the sidewalk, see if whatever you lost is up there, but actually you're looking to see if someone's following you. So think about that, okay? I was watching interrogation scenes the other day, you know, on one of these forensic shows. And, you know, like I've told you guys before, cops have training in psychological profiling. They're not maybe as well at it as a profiler from Quantico, Virginia, but, you know, I mean, they get training in that stuff. And they were interrogating this guy, and they, you know, they stepped out of the interrogation room, and the two cops were saying to each other, listen, and when this guy's talking, he's showing a lot of confidence, and he's taking control of the interview. We don't want that. So we're going to go in, and we're just going to hammer him, because it seems like every time we talk, he shrinks back. Okay? So they went back in there, and they just started hammering him, right? And finally, he confessed. You know, because the cops noticed that when the cops were talking, he would shrink back. They read his body language. How do you idiot-proof this? Don't say a fucking word. Shut up. Use the five words. Or go mute. You know, I mean, either one will do in my book, but just don't say a word. A lot of you guys know that I'm a huge metal fan, but there is a subgenre of metal called industrial metal. Bands like Ministry. I love that song, New World Order. I may not agree with the worldview of the members of ministry, but that song is good, and it's very anti-Big Brother, anti-global government and all that other stuff. But there's another industrial band called Rammstein. Americans say Rammstein, Germans say Rammstein. And there's a song called We All Live in America. And it's a derogatory song about how American culture is really just taking over a lot of cultures in the world. And my associates in Sweden, you know who you are, Schleipner, Odin's eight-legged steed, and my friend in England, I don't want to use his real name, let's say, Mr. Neeson. But you guys need to be doing whatever you can to undermine American pop culture in your country. I remember a few years ago, Will Smith went to Sweden to do a concert. And in between one of his songs, he said, wow, there's sure a lot of white people here. The audacity of these fucking people. I mean, what if you had a white artist go to somewhere in Africa or Jamaica? Wow, there's sure a lot of black people here. The people would be up in arms. You know? Death to American pop culture. You need to do whatever you can, my European, Australian, and New Zealand associates. Do whatever you can to undermine American pop culture. If you have a movie theater that's playing the local or the recent movie that came out of Hollywood that promotes race mixing, you need to do whatever you can to put that movie house out of business. Shut it down. Use your imagination and let people know why you did it. But this song, We All Live in America, I thought I'd take some liberties with this song. It goes a little something like this. I'm going to change a lot of the words, add a lot of words. It says, we all live in America. America, it's wunderbar. We all live in America. America, America. We all live in America. Coca-Cola, Mickey Mouse. We all live in America. America, America. This is not a love song. I no longer speak my mother's tongue. Europe is becoming brown. Pop culture is tearing her down. We all live in America. America, it's wunderbar. We all live in America. America, America. We all live in America. Super Bowl, Beyonce. We all live in America. America, America. This is not a love song. The white race will soon be gone. Muds will claim all our deeds, all because of Wall Street greed. We all live in America. America, it's wunderbar. We all live in America. America, America. We all live in America. Shaquille O'Neal, Michael Jackson. We all live in America. America, America. This is not a love song. Mother Europe has been undone. White skin becoming scarce. Only because you won't be fierce. The whole world lives in America. America, it's wunderbar. The whole world lives in America. America, America. The whole world lives in America. Steven Spielberg, Adam Sandler. The whole world lives in America. America, America. This is not a love song. There may not be a coming dawn. Behold the coming endless night. Oblivion rushes in to smite what is white. Death to Jewish culture from America. America, no longer wunderbar. Death to Jewish culture from America. America, America. Death to Jewish culture from America. Hollywood, the true human stain. Death to Jewish culture from America. America, America. My associates, my friends, my brothers out there, Sweden and Norway, Finland, Poland, Ukraine, Russia, France, Germany, England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, Serbia, Italy, Spain, Portugal. You need to do whatever you can to undermine the promotion of American pop culture in Europe and in all four corners of the white diaspora. American pop culture is poison. It's arsenic in our veins. It is destroying us as a race. It is completely Jewish. And you American activists out there, you insurgents, you associates, let us not look down our nose at any other white insurgency in the world. We are not superior to the associates in Europe or Australia or anywhere else. We are all one. And we need to promote pan-Aryanism as much as we can. We need to not be dumb fucks when we do our activities. Dumb fucks like Sean Gillespie, a former member of Aryan Nations, who wanted to firebomb some synagogues, and I believe it was Oklahoma City, because he idolized Timothy McVeigh. And he would make a videotape before he firebombed it, saying, "My brothers, I'm doing this for you. You're my kindred, and you know I do this for your enjoyment." And then they showed the same. I mean, the synagogue security tape had him firebombing the place, and then they found they pulled him over for some reason, and he had this videotape on him, and they watched it, and it was they showed the same building that he firebombed and him giving an interview on why he's doing it. Dumb fuck. Oh, come on, Frank. Cut him some slack. No, I'm not going to cut these guys some slack. Dumb fuck. Stop doing stupid shit. Sean Gillespie's now doing 39 years in a federal prison. He has to do every day that. There's no parole when you do federal time. He's going to come out a crinkly, wrinkled up, probably dead. I mean, he may not even come out of here alive. But when he comes out, he's going to be just gone, man. No more use to our race. I guess they caught him in a small town in Arkansas. You know, they were saying that, you know, if he would have thrown this Molotov cocktail on the roof of the establishment, he would have done more damage. That is bullshit. That is misinformation put out by the rabbi, the interviewed, and the cops. And you're setting fire inside an installation to cause more damage than setting the roof on fire. That's bullshit. You know, and I'm not saying I'm advocating arson, but come on, guys, that's stupid shit. All right, I need to cut it short here. I hope this information is useful. I hope you guys are training in all aspects of the 14 rules that I put down on a few shows ago, and you guys need to stay active and guys need to do the deed, okay? We must secure the existence of our people and the future for white children. Carpe Noctem and 14.
Well, there he goes. Frankie, Guerrilla Radio Man on down the road there today. He'll be back pretty soon. So that's it for today. Yeah, we'll close out with a little music here if we have time. Yeah, Terrible Tommy, off and clear. 5 words, 14 words.
Phone number...